Hello, yogis. Hello, bonsoir. Hello, stretchers of the heart, openers of the heart, seekers, searchers, and finders, I hope. In a way, it's not the best time for a Dharma talk because it's so beautiful outside. Huh? Nature is speaking like very loudly now with the double rainbow, and eagles and heron flying by, and the light, exquisite light. Yesterday evening, Heather spoke so beautifully of the heart, the citta, the heart mind. With this image that I love of the palm, receiving and holding, caring, discovering, so beautiful. And as I was sitting this evening here, I was reminded of some famous quote from Ajahn Chah that comes back here and there in the talks. You know, you might have read it in one of the books where he says something like, you know, you just sit there and let the mind and heart settle and be quiet for a little while, and it'll be as if you were sitting by a lake in the wilderness, and at some point all kinds of strange animals will come and will come to drink at the pool or at the lake, you know. And it feels to me like it's a good kind of analogy or description of what happens to us. We sit here, and I don't know if it resonates with you, if it feels like this, but all kinds of strange formations and animals and mind states and content of mind, states of mind come. Or Munindraji seems to have said, just sit there and the whole of the Dharma will be revealed, you know. And we sit here, and I was saying this in a group today, it's very strange because we come here in this very safe environment, beautiful environment, with not much to do. We say, can you sit and walk a little bit, and then just sit and walk, you know. And it can become so epic. Do you have an experience like big inner debates, you know, and fights, and, you know, self-affirmation, and, you know, like, it's complex, unresolved issues from the past attacking from the left, you know, fear of the lonely future attacking from the right, you know, and we sit in the middle of this. Yeah, it can be very challenging and dramatic, as I think you were saying yesterday, Heather. And also, the other version, exquisitely beautiful and what spacious. And so there's the whole range as we sit here. Yeah, I'm always fascinated by that. How can we stretch the heart to allow all this to resonate, to vibrate, you know, how can we be touched by all of this and stay alive, stay balanced? It's a challenge. It's very, we were mentioning this when we were talking at lunchtime a little bit. It's a field, I keep coming with this word this week, it seems, but we are entering a field of honesty. Yeah? There's a lot of, or it's another expression that comes to mind is it's sobering. It's really sobering, humbling to sit there and see all the different passages of different patterns of mind and mind content. So, what happens, it seems, in the course of practice is that we learn to recognize more and more the wholesome patterns of mind, or wholesome attitudes of mind, and the unwholesome ones. Unwholesome in the sense that unbeneficial, not good for me, unworldly thing would be an expression, not unworldly thing, not liberating, rather entangling. We recognize the states of mind, or attitudes of mind, or the patterns, the way the mind is used, that are entangling, creating more trouble. In Buddhism, I love this, when we use this term, beneficial, it points to two things. It's beneficial, something is beneficial or wholesome, it always means for me and for others. It's never just beneficial for me, it's always meant by, this is wholesome, it means it's good for me and for others, that I am visited by this state, or cultivating that state. And when we say it's unbeneficial or unwholesome, it means it's not good for me or for others. So there's no separation in this way. You know, good for me, too bad for others, I don't care. You know? And so we learn to make the distinction between one and the other. That's part of the discernment that happens in this. And what I love about this is that it's not so much that we think about this. Is this wholesome? Is this unwholesome or beneficial or not? It's just by kind of soaking in it, like feeling it deeply, it just reveals its wholesome nature in time, or unwholesome, unbeneficial nature. Because it has a taste of something that is liberating, helpful, or it has a taste of something that is crushing, oppressing, closing. Can you recognize some of this in your experience? Sometimes it's epic just on the physical level also. You know, just we were mentioning it in the group today, you know, the challenges of sitting here. So many things are revealed. And for me, when we sit here, part of what is revealed is the challenge of being embodied, having bones and nerves and sensitivity. And it becomes really highlighted that after, like, I mean, it depends for each one of us, but for some of us, after 6 minutes, it starts to become apparent that it's difficult to be embodied. For some of us, it's 17 minutes. It varies during the day. You know, sometimes, I'm good. I could go further than 45 minutes. Well, maybe at 51 minutes, it would become apparent to you that being embodied is not an easy thing. And so the physical challenges of sitting, but also, of course, the emotional and mental content that I was referring to, also the difficulties of having a mind, being in the middle of a mind that feels, receives impressions, you know, is impressed by the inner life, you know. And it's what it is to be alive. Alive means we're touched. Words in French, but yeah, we're visited by energies or images, and it resonates. That's the cheetah that Heather was talking about. It makes us vibrate, you know. And we can meet these challenges with resistance or without resistance. And there's a huge difference between one and the other. So I thought I could name a few of my personal example of the patterns that are revealed, or that have been revealed in the practice. And I was naming one today that stood out, and it stood out. I like this story because it's a very small little thing, but to me it revealed something huge, and it could be revealed only because there was there had been prior moments of attention, prior moments of, you know, tuning in sound, tuning in breathing, tuning in the felt sense of being here, tuning in the mind states, the kind of the colors of the heart, or the inner landscape or ambiance, you know. So tuning in here and there, just, oh, this is how it is right now, just like that. Nothing special, it's just like that right now. And so one time I'm in the dining hall, serving, and at the end of the line I come to pick up a spoon for my soup. I have the right to a spoon to eat my soup. I pick up this spoon, and what comes out is this huge serving spoon. And right with this contact of seeing the spoon, what attached itself was something that was kind of latent and waiting for any occasion to arise. Serving spoon was a perfect occasion for this mind state to express itself, you know. And so the feeling when I took the spoon was like, you greedy bastard. Need a huge spoon. There was a kind of a feeling, I don't think there was even a text or a thought, you know, but the whole kind of inner landscape change, it was really like heavy, you know, bad boy, you know, bad person, big spoon, bad person. And it was really, and then I saw myself like, hide the spoon. You know, nobody should see me with a big spoon. And then because of prior moments of awareness, then this was revealed. Otherwise it would not have been revealed. It would have been the truth. I would have been fooled by it. I would not have seen it. It would just have been the truth. It was almost revealed, almost exposed that I'm greedy, you know? And so then there was an opportunity, there was an opening because of this attention, because of this citta vibrating, resonating, being touched by the impressions, being awake to the impressions of the mind. There was like, no, I didn't choose the spoon. The spoon chose me, you know? And there was like, oh, this suddenly felt unwholesome. Because of the sensitivity, it became clear. I didn't have to say, is this wholesome or not wholesome? There was no need to think about it. It was what we call insight in this way. It was penetrative. It was like, not good for the mind. Not good for self, not good for others. Not good, not to be nourished, not to be believed, not to follow, not onward leading, not liberating, entangling. Yeah? And then there was like, oh, I do want to see this. Even though it's bad news, you know, it's the kind of first insight, you know, when we come to retreat like this, we sit, this first insight is, there's going to be a lot of bad news. There's going to be a lot of patterns who are going to be revealed, and they're not going to be fun patterns, you know. So, but then there's a different engagement with that. There's like, there's not like, oh, I don't want to see this, I don't want to see this. There's, I actually want to see this. I want to see this and be able to maybe raise the hand like this, the fearless mudra that my friends Yana and Catherine talk a lot about. You know, no. Not welcome here. We don't speak like this. We don't hold oneself like this. Nobody does, should do that. You know, it's not wise. No. Thank you, but no. You know, and of course it's going to find its way because it's latent. It's just waiting for another big spoon or something to arise, you know, and prove to the world that you're unworthy, that I am. So that's one of the... comes to mind another one that is actually exactly the opposite. That is so interesting. The mind, in this way, has no pride. Huh? That's what we say sometimes. It doesn't mind. It can really say you are one person greedy and inadequate and unworthy, And the next minute, probably in the same retreat, I can't remember, but here's the other opportunity for latent tendency of mind to be revealed. So I'm sitting there, and I get quiet after a few days of retreat. The mind is quiet, is interested, is connected. You could say the citta is vibrating with the world. If it's neutral, it's just touching the neutral. If it's intense, it's vibrating intensely. You know? I mean, that's just an image. I don't know if. But so I'm sitting there, and the bell rings. It's the end of the sit. It's time to go walk. But the inner conditions are really good. There's a quietness, a level of interest, energy and calm are balanced. It's the perfect condition for practice. So the thought crosses the mind, maybe we could stay here a little bit and instead of disturb and maybe get busy with the senses. Who owns these boots and how do they put them on, you know, and where are they going to walk, you know, all this. So there's something that can be wise maybe that says, oh, why not stay here for a little while? Cultivate the good qualities of mind. So ruffle, people start to move. And then the thought arises in the mind. I hope you all see that I'm still sitting. I know, I'm the best meditator here. So this thought comes, you know, and it's followed by shame. Oh my God, you know, I should just know that, not think it. At least, not think it that loud. You know, something anyway around it, like a recognition that it's a little bit too much. You know. But then people keep moving, and it's like, but it keeps coming back. But I'm really sitting really up straight, you know, and really quiet. I hope somebody is noticing this. So this starts to happen almost at every sit, you know. The sit, bell rings, mind very quiet, movement starts. I'm so hot. I'm the hottest meditator in town. And I'm ashamed and struggle. I shouldn't think this, don't think this. You know, resistance with the arising in the mind. Debating, but it's still true. I know it's not true. Be humble. Maybe I should go. No, you're going to stay. You know. And so, but I can't find resolution with this. So I come to an interview with my teacher, and I say to that, I remember it was Joseph who was there, Joseph Goldstein. So I describe this thing, and I'm distressed. You know, I'm in a struggle. So what should I do? You know, should I sit or not sit? It's horrible. I'm developing arrogance, you know, and that's not why I came here. And da, da, da. And Joseph's like, oh, but it's just a thought. What is the problem? It's just an arising in the mind. You can see it arise. You know, you don't have to give it any weight, or you don't have to take it personal. Something like this, you know, like very, very simple about it. And is there anything else? You know, yeah, but. And then I go out and I go sit, you know, and at some point that day or the second day or some point, you know, bell rings, body, mind, pretty quiet. And then the thought arises, you know, when the people start moving with the hearing. It was always with the hearing. It's interesting. As soon as there was feet moving about, you know, suddenly this thing would arise. And then there was just, oh, arrogance. You know, finished. It's just arrogance. That's it. There was no resistance, no. And then maybe a few seconds after, yeah, but I'm the best one. Yeah, you are. It's just a thought. It's not, doesn't mean anything about anything, you know. And I think you were saying something like withdrawing energy from, you know. So there was like, no, we're not going to invest in this. Neither hating it, nor loving it, nor believing it, but just saying like, you know what, we're very busy here feeling the feet, you know, the tingling in the feet. So thank you. For the information. And then returning to this, and then that thing. So, one of the aspects of wisdom that there is in there is that the not taking it personally. There's a thought that arises in the mind, and it's not taken personally in the best version. It's just there's something that arises in the mind, and there's a recognition, is this wholesome, unworldly, word leading, liberating, is it for my benefit and the benefit of others? Or is it not? If it's not, I just recognize this for what it is. Don't need to feed it. It has its own momentum. It came about, you know, with some mistake, some misunderstanding that the value of a human being was if they were the best, is the only place they had value. Something like this, you know. It's maybe being corrected a bit. And then it can actually start to dry up, vanish, you know, because it's not fed. It's not fed by fighting against it. You know. And then it, you know, there's freedom because this can arise and the mind can smile. You know, maybe one way that I have to understand this for me is the middle path. It's not the extreme of owning, identifying. This is me. It describes me and what I thought, and I'm a bad person who take big spoon and think they're the best. You know, it's not like this. And it's not the other extreme of not doing anything about it. It's the middle path of recognizing what is arising in the mind. And with time, the capacity to recognize this is good for this mind and for life. You know. And this is not so good. Period. So a few more of the example like this. I don't know if it's interesting for you. I think I can put a little bit of the teaching in there. So one time I have the chance to do a day long with Byron Katie. I don't know if maybe some of you know Byron Katie. She has a really interesting way to work with thoughts and kind of beliefs. And so I'm discovering her work, you know, and we have sheets. She has a kind of a pattern she uses that is pretty interesting. Anyway, at some point I lands on my lap of a sheet and there's this sentence there that says, I never want to feel dot 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 again in my life. Something like this. And I'm sitting there and I know exactly what I want to put there because I was feeling it a few days before and I truly never want to feel this thing again. I don't. So it's very easy for me. But grab the pen. I never want to feel this thing. And this thing was ashamed. I was not using the way I'd felt it was. I'd felt somebody was looking at me with disgust, you know, and so I don't know the non-violent communication way to talk, like really own it. But my feeling was I never want somebody to look down on me like this again. That was the, so probably feeling ashamed, something like this. It was very clear I didn't want to feel this again. And then in her little play with, she had a funny way to play with thoughts and beliefs and stuff. And so maybe on the other side of the page, she said, turn the page and you see what there's a new sentence with dot, dot, dot. Write the same verb there, the same thing there, but the sentence has changed. The sentence suddenly is, I'm looking forward to feeling. And I remember, I was like, no, never. No, I'm certainly not going to sign that contract. And it was like, I don't want to feel this, I don't want to feel. And then that was really, because of the practice of meditation, suddenly it became very interesting to me. It was like, oh, here is where I will not send my mindfulness, you know? So meeting experience with resistance or without resistance. And so my way of thinking about this was like, I bet you that in my life that might arise again. You know, there's a chance that at some point it might arise again. Do I want to engage with this or not? You know? So it's not like I want you to understand, well, I'm not saying I'm going to create the conditions for people to express disgust or, you know, make me feel ashamed and that's a good thing and it should be fine. You know, I'm talking about inner work, shutting down the part of life, you know. And I was like, oh, it's funny because I've been practicing for a number of years and I think that I really want to know all experiences and learn from them and have the citta resonate, really, you know, the palm that can be touched and discover a mind state for what they are and find a way to hold them and be with them in a skillful way, an appropriate response. But now I'm saying, like, no, I never want to feel this, and if I do, I'm going to blame the other person, and I'm going to, you know. And so I actually went and wrote this verb there. Like, I'm looking for it, and suddenly I could feel inside of me courage, interest, enthusiasm. Like, I actually, if that is going to arise again, I want to engage with this and find freedom from that, from allowing it to be felt, you know. And suddenly I was actually kind of looking forward to this situation that would be offered by life, probably freely, didn't have to look for it, you know. Being a gay man, for example, being a white man gives me a lot of privileges and a lot of ways that I'm prevented from feeling maybe something like this. But being a queer person, you know, I have daily occurrences of, if I can, I want to find. So there's something very, liberating for me and affirming. And it was like, oh, okay, I can actually meet the situation maybe and not shut down, become paralyzed, lose all my capacities of my mind, you know. And I've seen this after. I was like, oh, okay, all right. I can feel the kind of judgment coming, you know. I can feel it. I can stay alive in it. I can still be alive. I feel the heat of it, feel the mind that wants to close down, you know, feel that, you know, really get interested in that, you know, fear, paralyzing fear. Like, I mean, there's a whole field of emotions around this. Like, okay, now I'm losing my capacity to respond, you know, like I'm not intelligent anymore. Facing that kind of situation, like I can see the mind is closing down. That's how it is when the mind closes down. It's not able to respond anymore. It's paralyzing fear, shame, shutting down shame, that disabilitating shame feels like this. Let me stay in there a little bit more. Oh, that's how it feels. Okay. I don't know if you can feel in that. For me, in there, there's still something possible. Before there wasn't. Now there's like, oh, wow, very debilitating. And one of the colors that I want to talk about tonight that is very awesome is the compassion. And so for me, one of the qualities that can arise when there's this kind of engagement is, oh, my love, really not easy to pressing you down. This is really debilitating, I think is the word I want to use, you know. But there can be a part of the mind, I don't know which one lights up, you know, but a new part of the mind, heart, that lights up that is very wholesome. There's a recognition that it's difficult. It's hard to be here, my love. This is hard to be in the middle of this, you know. It would be, of course it would be debilitating for anybody. Of course it does that. We're going to stay here. We're going to stay here. Not judge, not, you know, add other layers of trouble. Yeah? And so, oh, I want to engage with this, even this most harsh feeling, state of mind, that I never want to feel again. If it happens to come, let me find a way to allow it to be felt, you know. And it could be totally okay to say, actually, beautiful Pascal, but for me, no. You know, no, there's no space for that. It's also a choice. You know? So I'm really talking about my personal practice here. And I would really want you to have your own independence about anything that is said here. You know? So don't be fooled by the stage. You know, the fact that the guy is a little up, you know. I really want you to have your own views and exploration of this and conclusion about this. So maybe just a few more words about that little aspect of the engaging, but also the quality of compassion that for me has been a savior in this practice. Like really one of the most wholesome qualities that I've seen arise or be born in the mind heart, you know, when the and sometimes I see it, I experience it as a voice, as I said, you know, this kind of oh, this is difficult to feel this. Sometimes it's an inner voice, a way to talk to oneself, so it shows up in this way. Sometimes it's more silent, and I feel as a, it's kind of a force of the mind that is committed to accompany. I'm going to be there. I'm going to stay there. We're going to be here. You know? So these are very, very personal ways that I see it being experienced. Just, I don't know, I want to share this. And so I'm sitting here, and there'll be, let's say, anxiety, some unsettling. And there arises this special presence. It's inner, it's inward, it belongs to this being, you know. But it's an accompanying presence. Yeah, we're going to stay here with you, you know. Sometimes it's more of a space. Sometimes it's just a little space, almost none. You know, there's a trigger of some sort, and I feel this little, it's like the trigger is a big rock, solid rock like this. You know, the state of mind is like stuck mind, rigid mind. You know? But I can feel this little edge of, okay, there's just enough space, almost none, but just enough space for that. Sometimes it gets bigger, and sometimes I have this unsettling, I don't know what it is, sometimes I feel it here, as a, I don't know if it's a kind of a existential angst or kind of some kind of loneliness that is a recognition that there's something so lonely in this experience, something so, that although there is connection, there is something also, I don't know, it appears like this. These might be just impressions or perceptions, but it appears like this. And sometimes this is held in a really vast field of compassion, so much so that it's actually not a problem at all. Like, you know, the feeling is like, oh, there's a lot of happiness here. While, surprisingly enough, there's this ease, you know. But it's not a problem. It can be there. And this I saw being developed with caring attention, with being attentive, with being curious, with just... Sometimes we don't have that and it comes from the outside. It's suggested, like now I'm talking about it because I want to condition this thing. That suddenly tomorrow at some point it might arise, like, oh, maybe I could talk to myself. Maybe there is a little space inside that I didn't notice, or what is my version of that, you know, or is that available? Before Christmas, in December, early December, I went to Spirit Rock to teach a queer retreat, and in the other Dharma hall, the community hall, there was a, unknown to me, I just checked the schedule as I arrived there, and there was one teacher that was giving a talk that night, Gavin Harrison, who was the author of one of the first Dharma book that I read. And so I was very excited. I thought, oh my God, I've been practicing for almost 20 years and I never met this person. I'm going to go hear them. And then that evening, there's something very beautiful that happened that I like to tell that story because, I don't know, I think it carries a lot of wisdom and compassion. And so Gavin did his thing, did his talk, you know, and then he opened up to Q&A, people at Q&As. And there was a young person that was sitting somewhere over there. They raised their hand and they took the microphone and they started describing their practice. And there was a lot of honesty, the honesty and the, honestly, we were talking about the beginning of the talk of the report of what the inner life, you know. And so this being, this young person was saying, you know, I heard about this mindfulness and I read a book about it and I went to day long and I'm really trying to practice this. I'm kind of new at it, but I'm putting a lot of energy into it, you know. I am, and I try to be aware, but there's often this, you know, this kind of heaviness, they were describing some kind of a feeling of unworthiness or inadequacy or not belonging to the world, you know, or feeling apart from, and they were saying, like, I try to be with this and accompany this and probe into this and feel it, but most of the time it gets the best of me, and it was a very beautiful moment because they were describing their experience actually very clearly, probably better than I'm doing actually now. It was very precise, and there was about 200 people in the room, and everybody was looking at this being. In my sense, it was almost palpable in the room that everybody was thinking, this being is so earnest, so genuine or candid, oh, that kind of, and so beautiful actually, such good chitta, you could say, you know, such good resonance. They know exactly what's happening there. They're there in the middle of that, and they report it honestly, you know. And so they went on to describe this, and at the end, Gavin, very spontaneous, very beautiful, free being, just, instead of answering from the stage like this, just stood up, very spontaneously, like the person finished and boom, he was next to this person, sitting next to them, like he went right in the crowd, sat next to them, took the microphone and started describing what we were seeing. You know, the beauty of this being and the honesty and the earnestness and and was just offering the other image or impression, you know, that was not seen by this being, you know, who was reporting on the difficult aspects of the mind. And he was saying, I don't know if you see, and Gavin talks a lot in a kind of poetic language, kind of Rumi-esque or Hafiz-esque, which made the whole thing amazing, the whole situation. Everybody was like stuck, you could see, like everybody was like, oh. And I was sitting almost where you are, imagine that. So I could not see Gavin, but I could hear his words of talking about how earnest they were, sincerity and willingness and devotion to the, you know, to freedom there was, you know. And it was so accurate and in so many ways. And it was very beautiful to watch the young person because you could see that they knew something important was happening, like an important message was being received, you know, but it was not like completely landing. You could see they were like, I better really be open to this. This is important information, you know. Somebody sees something I can't see, you know. But almost as somebody in a storm, you know, like trying to take your arm or the thing you're sending to them, you know, but you're not sure they're actually able to. But they were really listening very intently. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know if it's reaching actually, but they're really as available as can be, you know, but it's so far from their view of themselves, you know, that it's hard for them to, but I think they have a sense that there's truth in it, you know. It was so beautiful to watch. But still I felt very confident because I was thinking, maybe it's not actually totally landing. Because if it had landed, my senses, something would have opened, you know, and I was thinking, I think it's not actually totally landing, but I think the impressions are so powerful. You know, that Gavin went, you see how touching it is for me? That went straight in their face, straight close to them, and we're giving back for a few minutes, you know, like, I'm going to pour it on you, you know, you better take that load because you're going to need it, you know, and was like going like this, and I could see like, oh, this is going to leave an impression, that's going to be really helpful on the way, you know. And it was very, very, very compassionate, very caring. And I could see, oh, this is the power of what we do, you know. There's kind of two ways. There's the attention we bring can reveal the path to freedom and the beauty and the, you know, all this. It can come from attention, but it can also come from the wise and compassionate voice of another. We do this for one another. We can do this, offer wisdom, offer, you know, we have that capacity, language, speech, it's extremely powerful. It can destroy, but it can also, you know, heal, you know. And so this is what was seemed to be happening there. And at the very end, Gavin said, and it seems such a description of what was happening, he ended by saying, sometimes we're the last one to know that we're lovely. Sometimes we're the last one to find out that we're lovely. And I had goosebumps because I was like, right now there's 200 of us who see the beauty of this being, and they're probably going to be the last one to discover the beauty of that soul or consciousness or the, you know, that the beauty of that beingness, being alive, just that is an amazing thing, you know, and it can be cleared, it can there's things to do to make it resonate instead of resistant and, you know, identified to a lot of horrible images or oppressing images of self, you know. This compassion, this clarity, certainly this compassion does not arise out of a vacuum, you know, or in a vacuum, what's the expression? It's not just, oh, I want it, you know, how much? You know, it's not like this. It seems, that's how I want to put it tonight, is the price is high. It's a quality connection with the difficult. It's a sustained quality connection with what is difficult. That it's being deeply touched. That is where the heart, that is when the heart can stretch. Or rather, maybe the word I want to use is tear open. The opening of the heart very often seems, anyway, certainly in my experience, that it's not going to, sometimes it's been like, oh, radiant, you know. But often it's been, you know, it's sitting in it, sitting in the difficult mind state and staying with it, not drowning, not pushing away, not resisting, not shutting down, but staying, oh my good Lord, this is not easy to be with. This loneliness, this uncertainty, this confusion by some kind of, again, quality connection with it, made of what? Maybe some courage, some patience, something like this, that at some point, like, ah, this can be held. Oh, it's the same intensity, but the fear of it has disappeared some. You know, there's a capacity to be with this. Oh, broken heart, but open heart. Amazing. There's no problem anymore. You know? It's not like it's all rosy. It's still, you know, I'm still have an experience of separation from what was so dear to me. But it's okay. I can be with that. I can be with that. It's gone. Wow, it's truly gone. Partner, health, youth. The dream of a perfect moi, you know. A perfect life. You know? It didn't happen. is all crooked. It's okay. This is how it is. Yeah. There's something raw and beautiful. And sometimes it's not the compassion, sometimes it's more the equanimity aspect that works for us. Maybe to finish, I'll say just a few of the equanimity sentences that have been very helpful for me in practice. This is how it is right now. This is how it is right now. Such a helpful sentence for me. Wow, look at that. This is exactly how it is right now. That crooked, that unclear, that level of confusion, that taste of insatisfaction, that. It's not like this is only difficult, you know. I'm putting some emphasis on this tonight, because there's many beautiful mind states of calm and, you know, ease and spaciousness and all kinds of ways that it flourishes and manifests. But this is how it is right now. Another one. Phrase to bring equanimity, balance to the heart. Especially when I apply this to somebody else, somebody that doesn't behave like I want to. Here in the retreat, or I don't mind, they can be home. They could be unseen right now. I have no problem with that. Like, I can produce them in my mind. You know? So sometimes I have to bring this sentence. You have the right to your own choices. You have the right to your own journey. You have the right to your own pace. You have the right to your own life. Kind of to remove the edge of me imposing something with my mind. You know? This trying to. It's not so much like this. You do it very. But it's more like a. But I don't have hands, you know, it's just with my mind. I'm sitting there like. With my mind, I'm going to make you understand. With my mind, I'm making you going to change your behavior, change your heart about that. You know, you have the right to your own life. You know? Again, that's my inner work. It doesn't mean that I will allow abuse of any kind. You know? But it helps me understand that I can actually cannot control somebody else. You know? So I've sat a lot of time in the hall like this one, sitting and just because there was an obsession about somebody, about something, some behavior. And so I would say, just stop and I'll be with this person and with this theme, but with this sentence, to appease the heart a bit, bring equanimity to the heart. Another sentence, I created it myself. I'm joking. I mean, it's actually true. I'm actually very proud of that sentence. I was at the retreat and Sharon Salzberg was teaching the Brahmaviharas, the qualities of the heart, and she was and, you know, she gave a talk, and then I was thinking, the perfect way to express something for me to correct my understanding would be that. And then I came up with this, and then I went to double check with her, you know, and I said my sentence, and I said, and she said, I give you my seal of approval. That is an official Sharon Salzberg approved sentence. And I'm saying just this because I used it a lot and it's been very helpful in my life. I've just spent a lot of time saying, my happiness depends on my response, not on the circumstances of my life. My happiness or well-being depends on my response, not on the circumstances of my life. I use that for me because my understanding was unbalanced. I really thought and believed that the situation, the circumstances were what was going to bring me happiness. And at some point I started to understand that actually, maybe to some extent, but it was really lopsided. I needed to really bring the deep understanding that my quality of my chitta holding, embracing, being with, you know, was certainly as important, if not much more important. So I spend a lot of time sitting here. You know, when I was in my 20s, I had the diagnosis that was very severe. It's, in a way, it's surprising that I'm here today, because it was not the kind of what was the plan when there was the diagnosis. And so, and for a long time I thought that this was a kind of a curse and it shouldn't be, and it was complicating everything. So I spent a lot of time saying that sentence in relationship to that disease thing. It's actually not the circumstances, it's my response. And now I am totally convinced of that. I am 100% convinced that it's really my response that makes for my freedom. It's not the circumstances. And of course I also understand that I have agency over circumstances. Not complete, but some. And so that I can take care of the health of this being and put them to rest, you know, and make them do sports and feed themselves well. And, you know, like there's many things that it's not like, oh, it's not the circumstances, it's not just the inner life. No, but it's the things to do also. But it's a lot of the way to hold. And I'm saying this just because I think that for many of us, there's this little thing in my life, or that big thing, you know, that if I can spend a lot of time sitting here thinking, if that was a little different, if I didn't have that, or if I had that thing, then I would be fine. Well, maybe not. Maybe my response right now, my way to be separated from what I want, or my way to be with what I don't want, is very key in there. Okay. So these few words on the practice. Thank you for considering these ideas, and thank you for getting them if they don't resonate in some way, and for learning how to integrate them or be creative in your way, in your own way, around these issues that we talk about. Maybe we take just a moment to feel life and how it's manifesting right now. So may we find ways to hold care for any arisings in the mind-heart. Ways to hold and care for even resistance itself. Ways to accompany ourselves in a way that would be for our benefit, for the benefit of others, and the living planet we are part of.